abandon free market principles to save the free market system.
In a world of conventional confusion.
There will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
Daddy, what do taxes pay for?
Oh, why everything. Policemen, trees, sunshine. And let's not forget the folks who just don't feel like working, God bless them.
Don't be afraid of your freedom.
Prepare to unshackle your mind.
An idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by any army or any government.
Your professor has arrived. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome, everybody. It is Wednesday, December 11th, 2013, and today we are talking Bitcoin once again. Bitcoin is all over the news, and as interest in Bitcoin has grown, so has the number of critics and naysayers. So I brought on sort of our resident expert on the subject, my friend Eric Voorhees, who's been involved in Bitcoin perhaps from the very beginning, I think certainly for a good long time, and has written an awful lot about it. And I want to play devil's advocate with him today. So today's episode is not really Bitcoin 101. If you want to know what Bitcoin is, what the basic ins and outs of it are, I strongly recommend an interview I did with Eric when I was guest hosting the Peter Schiff Show some time ago. And this has had many, many views on YouTube. I mean, I think it's at just about 68,000, which is very high for a video that's not really a video. It's just a still shot and the audio from the Peter Schiff Show. So I would check that out. Just go to YouTube and type in Woods Bitcoin, and my interview with Eric will come up. We'll get to Eric in just a minute. A couple quick notes here. First, you may recall that on Black Friday and thereabouts, I had a special deal on my website, libertyclassroom.com. where we have courses, we have 9 courses now in history and economics and political philosophy and logic. And it teaches you stuff that you can learn in your car in these courses that are taught by me and taught by people I trust that you probably didn't learn when you were in school. It's the real thing that you should have been taught the first time. Well, so Black Friday, I had a 35% off deal for gift subscriptions for your friends and loved ones. Well, then I stopped that, except for you guys, it's secretly still going on. How do you get there? Go to libertyclassroom.com/secret, of course, and you'll find the 35% off offer is still there for you guys. And we take Bitcoin there. How about that? I just added that to the gift page. How about that? And then secondly, this is going to become the equivalent of Bob Barker's Have Your Pets Spayed or Neutered. Don't forget, when you're doing your shopping at Amazon, you can help us out at no cost to you by entering Amazon at TomWoodsRadio.com through our widget there, which will be visible to you if you are not using an ad blocker. The little Amazon widget at TomWoodsRadio.com is where you enter Amazon to make your purchases, and at no cost to you, you help us pay the bills we have here in our little Tom Woods Show office. All right, right now I want to bring Eric Voorhees onto the program. We've had Eric on in the past. He is my go-to guy on Bitcoin, and I am just going to throw objections at him one after the other, and we'll see what he says. Eric, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
All right, so today I just want to do devil's advocate here. I already told people that if you're interested in Bitcoin 101, you should listen to the interview that you and I did on the Peter Schiff Show. You can get that on YouTube. But today I just want to throw objections at you. In a devil's advocate style, and just see what you say, because there's been in the same, almost like in proportion to the interest in Bitcoin, there's been a growth in skeptics and naysayers, and they've had a lot of times it's the same arguments again and again, but some of them are sort of new, and so I want to run them by you and get your thoughts. Okay.
Yeah, they're certainly worth addressing at all times.
Well, the first one is a really specific one, and maybe you can you describe for us what happened with Sheep Marketplace?
Yeah. So most people have heard of Silk Road, which was the underground, illegal narcotics website that only used Bitcoin. That was shut down by the FBI back in late September, early October. And almost immediately after it went down, a few copycat-type sites came up. So there were a number of these. One of them was called Sheep Marketplace. And so I guess it was only, it may have been running before Silk Road, I'm not sure, but it was running for at least a couple months after Silk Road got shut down. And then I guess a week or two ago, there was an incident and a whole bunch of Bitcoin was stolen. And the question is, you know, was it a hack? Did someone hack in and steal all those coins and run away? Or did the actual site operators of Sheep Marketplace steal all the users' coins and make it look like a hack so that they could run away with a bunch of money? So obviously people argue that both ways, but the point is a bunch of money got stolen.
And it's a big bunch. It's like $100 million, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot.
Okay, so now what does this say, if anything, about Bitcoin in general?
So it's very important to realize that Bitcoin is similar to gold in many respects. And just as if you left your 400-ounce gold bar with some merchant, and that merchant was untrustworthy and took the gold bar and ran away, there's no one that you can complain to get the gold bar back, right? I mean, with gold, as with Bitcoin, possession is sort of 10/10 of the law. And if you have someone's gold and they don't know who you are or where you went, you can easily run away with it. So this is something that is an unfortunate lesson that a lot of people in the Bitcoin world have learned. They're not used to having total control over their own money, and total control, you know, requires total responsibility. If you control your money, you have to be responsible for it. So if you give it to someone, you need to trust them. And, you know, people running an underground drug marketplace may not be the most trustworthy type of people in the world. So some people, you know, seem to think like this should have been expected, but obviously theft is always theft and always wrong. So it's a very tragic incident in any case.
Well, I want to shift gears to a question that's been on my mind. I mean, I think I can anticipate an answer, but I think it'd be interesting to hear your answer. When I hear Bitcoin people talk, sometimes they talk about it in language that might seem to the average person to sound sort of over the top about what they expect Bitcoin to do. Like, Bitcoin is going to destroy the state, it's going to topple central banks, it has all this great potential. And maybe it does. But my question is twofold. Number one, for it to do that, it would have to be accepted, I would think, by, you'd have to have an awful lot more people using it. I don't think anybody denies that. You would have to get to a point where a huge, huge number, much, much larger than right now, would be using it. And my question would be, can we expect that plausibly when it is, after all, a system that is very difficult to explain to the average person? And in fact, the average person using it is going to realize that it's actually not that hard to lose bitcoins. Like, if you have, if you just install some app on your smartphone and you make a bitcoin transaction, you get a bitcoin on there, and then a few months go by, you haven't done anything with that bitcoin. It's time to upgrade your phone, so you toss it in the garbage. There goes your money. Your bitcoins are gone forever. So, is this something that you could plausibly imagine the masses of the public actually jumping into?
Well, certainly Bitcoin is not ready for everyone and their grandmother to be using it. It is still very small. It is still very much an experiment. It is still rough around the edges. Many things that in the future years will be, you know, the obvious Bitcoin tools that we all needed simply haven't been built yet. So until that happens, Bitcoin's usage will be limited to people who care enough about it to kind of get over that obstacle. And the same thing was true with the internet in the early days. It was, you know, before web browsers, before AOL, before Netscape. The internet existed, but it was very difficult to use. People didn't understand it. And it was around for, you know, a number of years in that state, with people slowly getting involved and building up the tools that later would allow it to be used on a widespread level. And now, of course, we all take it for granted and everyone uses the internet all the time. So that same process has to happen with Bitcoin. A lot of the Bitcoin companies are busy building those things, but they're not all ready yet.
Well, this is interesting to me. Can you maybe think out loud here? What kind of things would you like to see develop that might improve, I don't know, the functionality or user-friendliness of Bitcoin? And by the way, that example of the smartphone, That wasn't just pulled out of the air. That was me, because I sold somebody a book in February, the first time ever I made a Bitcoin transaction. And then I still hadn't quite figured out how to use it. And then when I upgraded my phone, because I hated that old phone, I got rid of the other one. And I thought, oh, no. And then, of course, it shoots up to $1,200. It was $30 at that time. What an idiot.
Yep. Well, you know, fortunately, people will tend to learn the lesson after they lose that money.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Ideally, you know, you don't want people that have to deal with that. You know, some of it is just, it takes time for people to learn the new system and how to use it responsibly. Just like when you're learning to drive a car, it takes some time before you're good with the car. For us who have been involved with Bitcoin a while, we know how to use it very well and very responsibly, and it can be done very safely and easily once you know it. But there's a learning curve, absolutely. There are other, you know, mobile wallets for your phone where if you lost your phone or destroyed it, you could have had a backup on your computer, for example, but you didn't know that. You could have had a printout of the private key somewhere. So there are ways to avoid most or all of the pitfalls of Bitcoin, but it takes some specialized knowledge. And I think probably the best new businesses in Bitcoin will be people that figure out how to remove the need for that specialized knowledge from the normal user base.
Right.
Just making it foolproof. That's where a lot of the value will come from.
Now, what do you say to people who say that Bitcoin is so volatile right now that it can't serve as a really good medium of exchange, and that in fact, it's really not being used as a medium of exchange as a result of that. It's really being used, people are holding it as a kind of speculative investment, and they're not really using it, you know, for the purposes that people, I think, who are Bitcoin partisans want it to be used.
Right. So first of all, it's not an either-or situation. It's not that either we're all using it as a currency or we're all speculating and holding it because we think the value will go up. It's obviously a mix of both, and you know, myself, you know, I hold a bunch of Bitcoins because I believe the value will be going up, but I also use it as a money, and I buy things, I buy airline tickets, I buy Christmas gifts, I pay contractors and workers in Bitcoin. So I'm using it as a money, and I'm speculating on its value. They're not at odds with each other, but you know, something like Bitcoin is going to either change the world and become, you know, kind of a protocol used by people all over the place, or it's going to fall out of favor for some reason and kind of dissolve. And maybe there's some terrible bug that will cause that to happen, or maybe a better cryptocurrency will come along, or maybe people just forget about it and then it'll go to zero. So what you have is a situation where the future expected price of a Bitcoin is either going to be zero or is going to be something really high. So how does a marketplace properly value that, right? How do you value something that'll either be zero or worth a lot? So every little indication of which outcome it might be is what leads to these big swings, right? When big companies announce that they've added Bitcoin integration, then it looks like, oh, this is actually catching on, and so the price is going to move up. And when governments get angry and say they're going to try to ban this, then maybe, oh, we can't use it anymore, and it's going to go to zero. So this is a market trying to price a revolutionary new technology, and I don't expect it to stabilize anytime soon, but we shouldn't be afraid of the volatility. We should understand that that's just a natural market phenomenon. And indeed, Bitcoin is far more stable now than it was 3 years ago. So as it grows, as the market cap gets bigger, as more people are using it, it will stabilize over time, but that's something that's earned, and it's not bestowed upon it at the beginning.
Well, that seems like a good point for me to ask this. I was going to hold this off to the end, but Roger Ver, whom you and I both know, recently had a sort of bombshell announcement because he had predicted a couple of years ago that Bitcoin would outperform gold, silver, the stock market, and the U.S. dollar by more than 100 times. And instead of taking 2 years, it took 2 years and 2 months for this to happen. So he wound up having to pay out as a donation the equivalent of $1 million U.S. dollars. So, you know, I don't it's no problem that he paid for the lunch, I think it was, when I met him that time. You know, I guess he can handle it. Are you willing to go on the record with any type of prediction about where Bitcoin will wind up? I mean, where's the fun in life if you don't take a risk like this, right?
Well, yeah, you know, and people are into Bitcoin for lots of different reasons, and for those of us who really believe that this is that this has just incredible potential, we've staked not only our money but our lives, our careers, our reputations, and sometimes even our friendships and relationships on this system. So it's very much something that people are risking all sorts of things on. But you know, it's like the Wild West, in that people saw opportunity and risked everything to go seize it, and there will be lots of heartbreaks and disasters along the way. But ultimately, that's the way that humankind progresses. You know, then no one actually took the other side of Roger's bet, so he didn't technically need to pay, but he wanted to make a big donation to the Foundation for Economic Education, and he saw this was a good way to do it. So yeah, it was quite an impressive donation for sure.
Now, another thing that's come up quite a bit is the question of secrecy and Bitcoin, because I think this is something that a lot of Bitcoin partisans point to, about how anonymous it all is. But I think it's only as anonymous as you make it. So I guess before we get into the anonymity aspect of Bitcoin, can you first tell me what, in your judgment, would be the one or two most appealing and attractive features, things about Bitcoin, reason that you're into this so much? Is secrecy anywhere on that list? Is anonymity on that list, or is it something else?
I mean, secrecy is not that big of a deal to me. But the two things that are probably the most important to me is that it is a money that is not created or managed by the state. It is a stateless money. This is also why I like gold. But of course, unlike gold, Bitcoin works amazingly well in day-to-day transactions and normal modern commerce, both online and in person. So it's really the first non-state money that I think has a chance to thrive in the marketplace. That's the first thing that I like. That's just an ideological argument. From a functional argument, it's just, I mean, once you understand how you use it, it's just damn easy. I mean, I can send $100,000 to someone in another country in 1 second, and there's no fee, there's no delay. It doesn't matter if it's a Sunday or Christmas morning or whatever. I can send money now to people as easily as I send them an email, and why not, right? It's all digital. The dollar you're using now, that's already a digital currency. Why does it take 3 to 7 business days for you to send your digital dollar currency from you and your digital bank account to someone else's digital bank account? It's not like they're shipping stacks of dollar bills across the earth or pounds of gold. It's all digital, so why does it take so long? That's the other best virtue of Bitcoin, in my opinion.
All right, now suppose you're just the average Joe getting into this. Like, I'm sort of the average Joe when it comes to this. I've got a donate Bitcoin widget on my TomWoodsRadio.com site, and I accept Bitcoin for my subscription website, LibertyClassroom.com, and I'm pretty happy with it, and you're right. I mean, I don't pay the fees that I pay, even when I receive the money. I don't pay the fees that I would pay to PayPal, for instance, when I get payments from anybody else. So this is all great and everything, but now I got these Bitcoins, and it's great if they increase in value. That's a good in and of itself. But what am I supposed to buy with them? And I know that we could say, well, look, it's still beginning, and there are new merchants coming online all the time. But the kind of running joke that critics of Bitcoin keep making is, well, you know, unless you're going to buy illegal drugs or computer programming services, you're going to want to cash it out and start using dollars again. So what's the point of the whole thing?
Yeah, so this is where a little bit of misconception comes. First of all, you can buy anything on the internet with Bitcoin already. And interestingly enough, the merchant doesn't even have to accept Bitcoin. There are ways now to buy things with Bitcoin through proxies and other companies and middlemen that will take your Bitcoins and buy the thing for you and send it to you. So right now I can buy anything I want on Amazon with only Bitcoin. So when people say, what can I buy with it? The answer now is anything.
All right, time out. I had no idea about this. So is there any way you can give the layman's quick overview about what steps would you take if you wanted to get started doing that?
So the name of the service that I used recently, I'm forgetting right now, but you essentially have an account with them, and they know your physical address, so they can send you things. And then it's just a browser plugin. And whenever you want to, oh, it's called Snapcard, actually, just remembered. So Snapcard, you can go to any website, and if they're, you know, say you're at Amazon and there's a Tom Woods book, say you want to buy Nullification from Tom Woods, you can you open the page on Amazon with the item, and you can click on the Snapcard link in your browser because you've added it. And then Snapcard will see that there's a product with a price, and you just click on that book. And then it says, okay, this book, you know, costs $20 right now. That equals 0.00264 bitcoins. And then it gives you a little Bitcoin address to send to. And then you just transfer bitcoins to that address, and the rest is done. You don't have to enter your name or anything. Like, it's really amazingly easy. They take the Bitcoin, they already have your address, and they order the product and send it to you. And you can do that with any e-commerce item on the internet right now.
All right, so we've been talking for, I don't know, maybe 17 minutes up to now, and covered what I think are the types of objections that are the most common these days. I mean, you also hear people saying this is a bubble, but I think implicitly you've answered that. But is there any recent criticism of Bitcoin, not one that you've gone over a million times, but are there any new ones that you feel like ought to be addressed or the other side should be heard?
Well, let's actually discuss that bubble idea for a little bit.
Okay, sure.
So people see the price of Bitcoin in the price history, and when you see the price of something that's just gone straight vertical, you know, anyone that knows about financial markets knows that that's unlikely to continue and that that's an anomaly and rare. And so it's understandable to conclude that, oh, okay, this must be a bubble, and that's scary. I'm not going to buy at these huge prices, and, you know, it's going to end in disaster. But Bitcoin has gone through multiple bubbles right now, and I expect it will go through a number in the future. Just due to how people, you know, supply and demand of things, when people start getting really speculative and interested in something, its price is going to go very high. Now, the important thing to remember with Bitcoin is that even if it's in a bubble, you know, whether it's in a bubble at $1,000 or if it goes up to $20,000 and that's the bubble, the bubble will pop at some point and it'll find a new equilibrium. But each time it goes through these bubbles, it finds an equilibrium that was higher than the bubble before it. And, it has never crashed down to the prices it was before that. So the bubbles really need to be taken in context. I mean, this last one where it had risen up to $1,200 per Bitcoin over the last few days, there was a big crash and it fell all the way down to in the 600s, right? So clearly a popping of a short-term bubble there. It's already back up to $1,000 and who knows where it'll be in the future. But the point is that if you are a true investor in this over the long term, you shouldn't worry about these short-term fluctuations and how the market's trying to price it. The short-term movements of Bitcoin are not really what's important, and it's probably a bad idea to try to day trade it, you know, unless you
right.
have a appetite for huge amounts of risk. But
now, wasn't that recent?
If the system gets adopted, the price will continue because it's a scarce resource.
Wasn't that recent drop in down to the 600s? Wasn't that occasioned by some news out of China about some Chinese thing not wanting to take Bitcoin anymore? What was that all about?
Yeah. So first of all, it's not always wise to ascribe causes to market movement.
Well, that's true.
You know, many, many, many things that go into every price. But certainly, the announcement out of China, I think, was the impetus for this last recent sell-off. Basically, it was either the Central Bank of China or some other, you know, fairly high up government group in China said that they didn't want Bitcoin to be used by financial companies in China. They didn't want banks to be opening up Bitcoin markets. They didn't want financial companies to be speculating on Bitcoin. So they basically barred the financial industry in China from getting involved in Bitcoin. So some people interpreted that as like, uh-oh, they're starting to clamp down. They don't want Bitcoin to be used. And so this is bad.
Right.
And that was perhaps why they sold it off. In reality, you know, at the same time, they clarified that Bitcoin is absolutely legal to be used by normal Chinese people and that They just need to understand that there's risk in it, and they can use it if they wish. So other people saw it as a positive, but the negative sentiment won out. Perhaps several days later, as people digested the news and realized that it wasn't as bad as it sounded, maybe that's why the price is already back up to $1,000.
You know what's interesting is that I can recall a time, as I'm sure you can, not that long ago, when Bitcoin was being talked about really only by a small community of libertarians and contrarians of various sorts, and it seemed like something sort of off the wall, and I don't know what this thing is all about, but now it's in the financial papers, everybody's talking about it, everybody's expected to have an opinion about it. Is this happening sooner than you expected, or is this right on time, or what do you make of all this sudden growth and interest in it?
Well, you know, those of us who were involved 2 or 3 years ago when it was still really, really tiny and really niche, you know, we talked about how this would happen, that Bitcoin's going to keep growing and becoming more and more integrated into the world's financial system, and that, you know, more and more important players will start to take notice and get involved in it. And to a large extent, we were laughed at, you know, and said, oh, you guys are dreaming. You're just a bunch of idealistic libertarians. You have no idea, you know, about money. You know, this stupid deflationary currency can never work. You know, every reason under the sun why we were idiots.
Right.
But of course, it is working. It is working in the marketplace, and the marketplace is adopting this system increasingly. So, I mean, it's getting integrated all over the place, and it's not just a U.S. phenomenon. It's happening all over the world. I think that the Central Bank of Kazakhstan just released some information about their opinion on Bitcoin today. So, yeah, it's extremely exciting. It's happening a little faster than I thought, but, you know, Internet technology tends to catch on pretty quickly.
Now,
there's a financial incentive for it, then maybe even faster.
I'm sorry to say I didn't click on it to get the information. I'm just so swamped with work these days, but I'm pretty sure I saw a headline that Bank of America came out with a report on Bitcoin. Am I right about that? Where they basically said, well, you know what? There may be something here. Am I remembering this right?
Yeah, so it was, I think, a guy named David Wu or something Wu. He's a respected kind of Wall Street guy that works at Bank of America, Merrill Lynch. And I'm not sure if he works in the, you know, normal Bank of America corporate offices, or if he's part of some investment wing under the Bank of America corporate structure. But in any case, yeah, I mean, it was under Bank of America letterhead, and, you know, released as a sort of a notice on this guy, this analyst's opinion on Bitcoin, you know, whether he thinks it's valuable, where it could go from here. You know, so these type of analysts release this kind of stuff for lots of things, whether for stocks or various investment opportunities. So it's important because it indicates that the normal financial world is really starting to take notice, and they think it's worth their time to pay attention to this. And, you know, I think they're absolutely right to be paying attention finally.
All right, I think we're just about out of time, Eric, but I hope I can have you come back on. I mean, I'm not even qualified to call myself an amateur in this stuff, but it interests me greatly. And I don't know. I mean, I like you guys. Like, the thing seems plausible to me. I understand what the naysayers are saying, but it seems like when I talk to you guys and I throw the stuff at you, that you always have something sensible to say in reply. So I hope this does as well as you guys always dreamed it would. I love when good, well-intentioned, decent people are totally vindicated. You know, we've had the opportunity to see that happen a few times in our lifetime, and it'd be nice to see it happen one more time. So, Eric Voorhees, thanks so much for your time today. Always appreciated.
Thank you very much, Tom.
That's all the time we have for the program for today, everybody. My thanks to Eric Voorhees and to all you guys for listening. Make sure and subscribe to the program. Think of how heartbroken you'll be if you miss an episode. You never will if you subscribe on iTunes or you subscribe on Stitcher or you use the RSS feed that we have over at TomWoodsRadio.com. I appreciate you guys listening in. We got more greatness coming for you later this week. We'll see you then.
The Tom Woods Show.